Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the unofficial WWE podcast. Today is April 15th, 2021. Obviously, it is a Thursday, one day after Dynamite, and my name is Mimi Burris. We've got a whole lot to get into, per usual, about this show, but first and foremost, guys, I have a couple of quick things to cover. Like I always say, want to quickly start off with thank you for choosing the unofficial WWE podcast. Thank you for choosing this podcast specifically. Thank you for choosing us for all of your podcast needs. No, but really, always thank you for listening, guys. It means a whole lot to me. It means I get to keep doing this thing, and I love talking about wrestling with you, and you know the whole shtick, but I want to make sure I'm always, you know, making sure you guys know I'm grateful for the fact that you guys want to listen to me talk for an hour about wrestling. That's awesome. Otherwise, big news. I am pulling the heist of the century. I am channeling my inner Seth Rollins, and I am stealing one of Matt's co-hosts for next week's Dynamite review show here. We're going to have Ashley Mann on here reviewing Dynamite with me. Going to be nice to get a second perspective. I thought it might be a good idea to just keep things fresh, change things up. Might be nice to have her on here every now and then. So, you know, I'd say we'll see how it goes, but I know that she is going to be a great addition to any show she's on. I always love hearing what she has to say on any of the review shows she does with Matt. So I'm super excited for that. Looking forward to having her on again next week's Dynamite review show. She will be on here with me. With that out of the way, I do want to quickly say before we get into this week's show, I talked about a little bit about it last week, but Jericho on the Broken Skull Sessions, I'd be remiss not to mention it. All I'm going to say about it, guys, is go watch it for yourself. You know, they do mention AEW, obviously, and it was nice to see just two guys on, you know, obviously Stone Cold is not an active competitor, but just two guys, two different brands right now, coexisting, talking about wrestling and the love and art of wrestling, because, yeah, we want competition because competition makes everybody better, but also just the more good wrestling content out there for us guys, I mean, the better our lives are as wrestling fans. So, awesome podcast to watch. Chris Jericho is such a genius in regards to evolution of character, behind-the-scenes stuff. I just think he's fun to listen to when he talks about wrestling. He clearly loves this thing, you know, a whole lot. So cool to hear his perspective. It was different kind of than a lot of other people's I've heard before. He's got a weird but different way of looking at the whole business, you know. So interesting, and that's all I'll say about it. Go check it out. It's about 2 hours long, if not more. I watched it after night two of WrestleMania, and I was up till like 2 a.m. because I couldn't turn it off. So apologies to my bosses at work for being slow and dreary, but Chris Jericho is awesome, so maybe not. All right, all that out of the way, guys, we're going to get into this show. Exciting stuff went on. We had the heel Young Bucks. We had Chris Jericho's babyface-ness, and he's just loving it. We had Mike Tyson once again. We had a whole lot to talk about, and so, yeah. So this show, before we got into the official intro, we started off with a Young Bucks promo. They just basically were talking about how they chose friendship with Kenny Omega and that Don Callis was right, that they had changed, and said they weren't hungry anymore. And so essentially what I got out of this is that they were addressing last week people saying that that whole segment with them conflicted and whatever was crap. They're bad actors and they should just be one thing or the other. And that's what they're doing. And that's what they did later on in the show. And we're going to get right into that. Before we had the tag team title match, though, we did get a quick promo from Mike Tyson, who was obviously interrupted by a dashing Maxwell Jacob Friedman in a beautiful blue suit, I have to mention. I don't know why that just added to this for me, but essentially, MJF tells him that his dad told him that he was a big deal back in the day and tries to tell him that Chris Jericho is the enemy and tries to bribe him, shows him an empty check, you know, Tyson rips it up, eats it, and then spits it back out at Jericho. And yeah, it was a cute, nice little segment. Love the line about MJF said something about Tyson's tattoo, like face tattoo, and I think that's something that only MJF could ever get away with. So, all right, moving on down, we had Death Triangle, Rey Fénix, and Pac versus the Young Bucks for the AEW World Tag Team Championship, and championships, multiple titles, obviously. And yeah, this was a great match, guys. This was probably a different match than I guess I was expecting, or we had been expecting. And so I kind of see why they might have held off for a little while in this match, because the dynamic, essentially, that I got out of this whole thing, and we're going to recap it as quickly as possible. I have like a lot of notes on this match, but I'm going to try to cut it down a little bit with you guys, so bear with me. But yeah, I mean, we had a lot of good stuff, and the difference between this match, between what I think it would have been a couple weeks ago versus today or yesterday, was that now that the Young Bucks were heels, instead of like this awesome, fun, well-told, I don't want to call it indie style, because I think it's way more than that. Let's call it exhilarating, high-flying match, right? Which we did get some of that, of course, but it was more of like a cross between an indie and traditional style match, where you've got your heels and your baby faces and the beatdowns and the hot tags and all that stuff, plus all the fun, high-flying crap. And that's, you know, we got the best of both worlds. So overall, I love this. But let me give you guys, like I said, a quick recap. The Young Bucks come out after Death Triangle, and they've got their really stupid-looking white leather jackets and their bejeweled headbands. And, you know, Don Callis obviously comes out with them. He's on commentary. Throughout the entire match, he's explaining point by point why the Young Bucks are the quote-unquote new Young Bucks now. And yeah, the rest of the commentary team is really drilling it in and driving it home that these guys are not the same Young Bucks. I thought it was a little bit excessive. Let me just throw that in there. I thought it was a little bit excessive how we got, like, I don't know, I'm not stupid. I got it after the first three times you mentioned it. Like, cool off a little bit, but they really drove it home. I think AEW rewards its fans for paying close attention to a lot of things and looking for the little details. I don't need to be treated like I'm stupid. But that's just a small thing and a great match. You know, later on, the match breaks down. We get some great dives to the outside by Pac and Phoenix. We got this awesome move when we came back from picture in picture. Huge clothesline from Pac to, who was it? I think it was Matt Jackson, who's like mocking Death Triangle. And they get the hot tag. He gets the hot tag to Phoenix, who hits some unbelievable offense, as we all know Rey Fénix will do. He hits an assisted springboard hurricanrana type thing, right? Using Nick Jackson as using Matt Jackson as leverage to Nick. This was unbelievable. I've never seen something like that in my life. I think, guys, every time Rey Fénix gets in the ring, he shows me something I've never seen before. It's a bold statement, but I'm throwing it out there. And yeah, so then we have Pac, who gets a near fall after hitting a blue thunder bomb, and gets another one after a German suplex. Rey Fénix does a bunch of awesome Rey Fénix things that I can't even take notes fast enough to keep up with, but he's just Rey Fénix. And then Nick Jackson hits a massive rebounding destroyer. That looked incredible. Like the rebounding springboard destroyer thing to poor Fénix. And we get a slugfest between Pac and Matt Jackson. Pat, that would be their couple name. Pac and Matt Jackson. And then the offense spills to the outside with some amazing moves back and forth. There was like that, you know, mirror poison Rana that they both did. I think it was Nick who did it to Pac and Fénix who did it to Matt. We have a superplex and a frog splash by Death Triangle for another near fall. Swear, I thought they were going to get it after Pac hit the black arrow, but obviously Nick Jackson is able to get Fénix over on top of them and breaks up the near fall. And then, you know, towards the end of the match, Nick Jackson hits Pac with a low blow. Fénix makes the tag and hits him with a super kick. But then Nick Jackson, the jackass that he is, rips the mask off of Fénix and then tosses it into the crowd, makes this, you know, face to the camera like, oh, did you see what I just did, guys? Took his mask off. Like, smarmy little awful heels, and understandably, Fénix covers up his face and gets hit with some stereo super kicks for the 1-2-3 for the Young Bucks. So, guys, awesome match. Like I said before, I went through that recap. Awesome, awesome stuff by both the Young Bucks and Death Triangle. Awesome, moves, obviously, and storytelling, specifically from the Young Bucks. And then, of course, you can never be upset with the Death Triangle match. That tag team is probably my favorite tag team to watch in all of wrestling right now. Again, you guys, I rant and rave about Rey Fénix every single time on this podcast, and I never want to leave Pac out of that conversation. And, like, of course, I don't want to leave out Penta either, but obviously he is not out in the ring, so we're not talking about him now. But all of these guys, just the new stuff that they bring every single night, you know, they wrestle like their lives depend on it, every single Dynamite, and I love it every time. Nothing but good things to say about them. And in regards to the Young Bucks, I love this Young Bucks way more than I loved last week's Young Bucks when they were conflicted. Do we hit Kenny or do we not? Like, it's terrible acting. So great stuff in this match. Like I said, I love the indie move set, but also traditional style of this match. The Young Bucks, the way they're looking into the hard cam, or not hard cam, the way they're looking into the camera is just, again, you know, we're that good, essentially. Like, this is the Young Bucks that are 10 times as entertaining, and not in, like, a way, again, I hate these guys right now. They did an amazing job at playing heels, but they are so much more entertaining than the babyface Young Bucks that just felt forced. So, super happy about how this all came together. I think this match was better in a storytelling point of view than it would have been otherwise if it had happened a week or two before. However, I think we missed, like, obviously the fun, you know, exhilarating, crazy offense necessarily what we would have gotten as if it did happen a couple weeks earlier before the heel turn. With that being said, though, we weren't remiss for any awesome offense anyways. I'm just saying I think there would have been even more if you guys could believe that. So all that being said, like I said, guys, I have nothing but good things to say about this match. I think it should have main evented. Don't get why it didn't. I think the main event was boring, and we'll get into that, but I'm sure plenty of you will disagree with me on that, but we will get into it, and let's move on down the card per usual and try to stick to this format that I do, because that's the only thing that keeps me on track here, guys. And we had the Dark Order and Hangman Adam Page being interviewed by Alex Marvez backstage. Marvez asks Adam Page about the Elite, and essentially, the Hangman just ignores him and ignores the question and says that it's going to be 4 to 6 weeks for John Silver's shoulder to heal, and talks about that in food or something. And then Alex Reynolds encourages Silver to do some rehab to the applause of the rest of the Dark Order. And Alex Marvez is kind of like, that's not what I asked you guys. And they just ignore it 100%. And I love this. I love this. This is a cute segment. The Dark Order are kind of like protective of Hangman Page in a way. You know, Page doesn't want anything to do with the Elite at this point. And to me, it's only a matter of time before Kenny and Hangman's paths cross. I know, I guess this is a perfect time to bring this up because I was thinking about this. You know, I assume Hangman Adam Page, I've said this before on this podcast, is going to be the one to take the title away from Kenny Omega. You know, you get a babyface heel kind of thing going on. And so who's a bigger babyface right now, maybe besides Jon Moxley on AEW, than Hangman? But my only issue with this is that I know that Rich Swann. I don't know, guys. I don't watch Impact, I'll be honest with you. Rich Swann and I'm probably just going to call him Swan to cover my ass. But Rick Swann and I just did it anyways. Swann and Kenny Omega have a title match, title winner takes all match coming up in Impact. So I understand that that's kind of the next challenge for Kenny. My only issue with this, though, is that, one, they haven't really been advertising that match on AEW much, and I don't really see a clear path as to who we're supposed to think is the next challenger for Kenny. I understand, yes, the rankings dictate, you know, Adam Page will be or whatever, but I just feel like I need, with the whole web that Kenny Omega has with all these different feuds and the Elite and the Young Bucks, and he's got the Good Brothers and the thing with Jon Moxley going on, and I doubt they run that back another time. I think Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston probably form a tag team, if anything, or, you know, Renee Paquette's gonna have a baby, guys. I don't know, maybe Jon Moxley goes away. I don't know what's gonna happen, but I assume that is over in a title picture form, or kind of way. I don't think we're running that match back. John Moxley and Kenny Omega, that is. So I would like a clearer direction as to who's the next challenger for Kenny Omega. Like, I would like to see a little more focus on him defending that title rather than this whole Elite thing. I get it. I think it's a good storyline. I think it's interesting and exciting. But that's your world champion. That's the thing everybody is going after. Show me a little bit more direction as to who is up next. Who's going to be the next challenge? When is it going to happen? I just want a little bit more direction in that area, because we can get caught up in all this other stuff going on around, you know, the center of the web that is Kenny Omega. But at that center of the web is the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. So let me know, you know, not to to quote the legendary Goldberg, who's next. All right, moving on, though. That was a long thing to talk about, a short little segment like that. But we had the Inner Circle and Mike Tyson being interviewed backstage. Chris Jericho calls the Pinnacle the Pineapple again, and then says that he called Tyson and others to make apologies, and said that he's got a lot of respect to Tyson because he stayed relevant for 30 years and Chris Jericho can relate. Again, shout out to that Broken Skull session. Go check it out, guys. Tyson says that he's got respect for Jericho as well. And he quotes my late great, I don't know why I'm calling her that. She's still alive and healthy and well with a new hip as well, guys. My beautiful, wonderful grandmother. Quotes my beautiful grandmother and says, who was an English professor in her day, that he's firm but fair. Sorry, that's all I could hear was her while Mike Tyson is saying that. If you guys, again, you don't know, but my wonderful little small Catholic grandmother English teacher saying firm but fair in comparison to Mike Tyson, I'm going to say she's more intimidating. All right, and he's going to call it down the middle and wishes Chris Jericho luck. And all I really have to say about this, guys, is isn't it nice to have Jericho as a babyface again? We rarely get to see it, I feel like, in the 30 years that we said that he's been around. We didn't get a lot of babyface Jericho, and it was nice to see. The one thing that I'll add to this, though, is, you know, he talked about how he's going to make apologies to everybody, which, whatever, I get it. He's a babyface. He's really sinking in that, though, that I think he's okay. I think we all get it at this point. Like, I think he made his point, and it's an important point to make. Like, you just don't get turned on and become a babyface by virtue of that or by circumstance of that. It's important to show the evolution of now I'm a babyface and little small changes, like things to the attire, like we saw the inverse version of the Young Bucks earlier in the night. Little things like that are important, but he's really driving it home. I don't need any more of that. Unless I would love to see this, and if they do this, I'm claiming it. But, you know, the Inner Circle's best gift to me is obviously they're all extremely talented wrestlers and all that, but they're hilarious. They're so funny. And Chris Jericho can get away with calling the Pinnacle the Pineapple and have it be funny. So I want to see Chris Jericho give me little segments, whether it's on actual Dynamite or maybe put it on Dark or just on YouTube or Twitter or whatever, Instagram. Like, give me segments of Chris Jericho just going around to all the people that he's wronged in the past years and just, like, giving him fruit baskets with, like, you know, Hager behind him and Guevara, and maybe put him in funny suits. I don't know. I think that would be hilarious. Essentially, Chris Jericho going and making amends to all the people that he screwed over. I think they that's gold, and they could do so much with that. So would love to see that. But good little segment. And moving on down, guys, my favorite women's match of the night. And I can say that because guess what, guys? AEW put two women's matches on one Dynamite. Who would have thought it finally happened? And with that being said, I want to say that, you know, last week's show was not great. Going up against TakeOver, it was really not great. But they addressed a lot of the issues with it, I think, and a lot of the things I talked about on the show last week. And one of them was the fact that the women need to stop being put in the third hour. And two, they put more than one women's match on the show. I think this added so much. I know it sounds weird, but it's just the diversity of it helps everything flow along quickly. And it doesn't hurt when the two women that you put on the show are Red Velvet and Jade freaking Cargill, who stole the show. Unbelievable match. We get a quick video recap of the Shaq, Cargill, and Cody Velvet match from the tag match on. And we get a quick recap of the tag match from Dark the night before, who, you know, we had Cargill interfering and all that. Velvet starts with a bunch of strikes on Cargill right as she gets into the ring, but obviously Jade hits her with the big knee. They go back and forth for a little while. Velvet hits a beautiful reverse spin kick and then a suicide dive. story of this match, obviously, is that Jade is just too strong, takes control once again, you know, hits her with a fall-away slam over the barricade, essentially just flinging her into all of her friends. It's a great shot of Cargill kind of in the corner, if you saw in the ring. Well, we see Red Velvet getting back up from the outside. She's, like, counting her abs. Jade dominates during the picture-in-picture break, and then we come back, and Velvet avoids a spear in the corner, takes three clotheslines, you know, like the lesser version of Ciampa versus Walter, to get her down, and then she hits a standing moonsault for a near fall. Then she misses a moonsault off the top, and I don't know if you guys saw this, but poor Jade Cargill. I just thought, like, this could have been so much worse. I haven't heard anything coming out of it, so I assume she's okay, but she whacked her head against Jade Cargill. When I say poor, I meant poor Red Velvet whacked her head against Jade Cargill, who clearly didn't move out of the way quickly enough or far enough for when, you know, obviously Red Velvet missed the moonsault. She just swacked her head right on Jade Cargill's back, and I assume that that's not a fun place to land, considering she looks like, you know, if I moved my finger on her back, I would get a cut. So, anyways, Jade Cargill hits the Jaded for the three count. If you guys don't know what the Jaded looks like, it looks like the Glam Slam, and it's perfect move for Jade Cargill. So this match was awesome, and I know I just ranted and raved about how the other match was my favorite match of the night, but I don't know, guys, anymore. This was just awesome. I've told you before, I was hyped about this. I think Red Velvet has more babyface potential than anybody else, any other woman on the roster. So lovable. She's not like your white meat babyface. She's like, you know, badass and awesome and cool. And so I love this. Love the story being told in the match about the fact that, you know, Jade Cargill comes in this. She's twice Red Velvet's size. She's got more muscle on her than Red Velvet could ever have in her entire life. She's just huge in comparison to Red Velvet. And she looks like, or assumes that it's just going to be another one of the squash matches that she's had. But no, because Red Velvet's like a fighter and, you know, gets all these awesome offensive moves in. But sadly, again, like the story of the match is that the tenacity of Red Velvet was just not enough. Jade Cargill is just too powerful and strong and really good back and forth. You know, I want to point out too that the fact that these women, I think, both clearly have like minimal, you know, very, very minimal experience in the ring, especially on live TV, or just TV in general. And so the fact that they could wrestle a match like this, like, this is essentially was like a developmental match. This, to me, reminded me of, like, NXT 5 years ago, when it was supposedly, right, a developmental brand, but it was so incredible somehow still. Again, that one botch, not a problem. Everything else looked unbelievable. So, like, if you think about where these women are in their careers, look at them 10 years down the line. I guarantee we're going to be like, oh my gosh, Jade Cargill, you know, Red Velvet, round 5, right? Still like that rivalry that we can come back to. And this was, they just have something. There's such chemistry there that's something that's just going to be able to be used 10 years down the line. I swear, guys, you can quote me now. Love this match. Love these two. Love what they had going on, and yeah, awesome to see these two women represent, you know, in a week where we got to see Bianca Belair take the women's title and wrestling Sasha Banks in the main event of night one. We also got to see two black women wrestling again against each other in AEW and stealing the damn show, representing. Awesome stuff, guys. And it doesn't matter, obviously, what color and what gender they are, but either way, right, it's making a statement that this women's division is something to watch and keep your eye on, and couldn't be happier with how this went. I couldn't have liked this more. So, speaking of women in AEW that I couldn't like more, we had an interview with Dr. Britt Baker. She makes fun of the ranking system once again, saying that she's moving up in the ranks, obviously, with her matches on Dark and Elevation, and is going to be the role model as women's champion soon and advertises Elevation once again. I love this segment. I liked it just as much as I liked last week's. She's kind of like making fun of the ranking systems, but at the same time, pointing out that they do have ranking systems and continuing to make that a thing, right? You need to be up in the ranks to get a title opportunity. I like that, unless you win some battle royale once a pay-per-view or something. Which, by the way, guys, fun fact, I don't think anybody who's won a title opportunity from a ladder match or a battle royale or anything at one of those pay-per-views has ever actually won the title. Just throwing that out there. So there's no legitimacy behind any of those. But with all that being said, totally sidetracked. I think this was smart because they know Britt Baker draws numbers. But and why wouldn't you have her advertise Elevation and Dark and all that stuff? The only thing I'd say, though, is if you know she draws numbers, why don't you put her wrestling on, you know, AEW? I would love just a random match with Britt Baker on AEW just to see her again. It's been a while. Miss her. Miss watching her wrestle on Dynamite. So, again, we're just, like, knocking one after the other. Great stuff. We had Anthony Ogogo, again, the most fun name to say in wrestling, guys, versus Cole Carter. Ogogo is accompanied by The Factory and specifically, oh my God, I'm forgetting his name. QT Marshall. Jeez, God, that shows you how much this is all focused on the rookies of The Factory and not QT. We have a quick collar and elbow tie-up. Ogogo pushes him into the corner. There's a waist lock, standing switch. Carter hits a hip toss, but Anthony wipes him out with a body blow, and the referee calls it a TKO. From a body blow. I can say I don't think I've ever seen a body blow as a finisher. And I love it. I think it's great. I think some people might have complaints about the realism of it all. But this guy's like a professional boxer, right? And, you know, when I think about the fact that back in the day, guys, you know, a DDT was like, you know, a freaking scorpion death drop, whatever. Like, it was like, it was a Canadian destroyer equivalent back in the day, you know, before they did all that crazy stuff they do now. So really, all it is, you know, the people who selling it, the people who sell it, the amount of times it's done, how it's treated, you can make anything look crazy. You know, the boop, for all I know, could be the greatest finisher in WWE. We could bring back the finger poke of doom that killed the business. Realistically, my point being is that it's all about the presentation of it. So I like it. I thought this was new and different. And Anthony Ogogo, I said it last week and the week before, I think, his star power just has a presence in the ring. So I think he's going to be, again, a lot of potential there. Going to be big in AEW in a couple years. So exciting for him. Next, we had a Miro video package. It was quickly says that he's been looking for Kip Sabian and that he's just wasting his time with him. So he's moving on without him to fulfill his destiny to become champion. Thank God. That's all I'll say about this. I think if it's not Lance Archer, Miro is the new TNT champion. I'd love to see Miro just whoop Darby Allin all around the ring and take the title from him. I think that would be awesome. Essentially, give me like a squash match for the TNT title. Really establish Miro. I think that would be awesome. So that's what I'd like to see from there. But next we had Chris Jericho versus Dax Harwood. Blanchard is sent back as he comes out, obviously, with him. Jericho is in control in the beginning of the match. Dax goes for a steel chair. Tyson takes it away. Dax goes for a cheap shot. Or Dax gets the cheap shot, excuse me. Then he goes for the bat. Tyson takes that away, too. As you can tell from the theme of this match, there's a lot of that. And then Jericho slams him into the barricade. Later on, they, you know, Dax hits Jericho with the mic, but Jericho hits him with a pen. Love to see that. He can pull that off as a baby face. I love the middle finger and the camera thing, too, that happened later. But we had a lion saw for a close count. We had a springboard powerbomb by Harwood for a near count as well. We had a miss of the diving headbutt, and then Jericho with the lion tamer. But Cash gets involved, and Guevara takes out Cash. Codebreaker to Dash, Dax, Dash, it's Dax and Cash, his couple name apparently, Codebreaker to Dax, and then the Pinnacle, and the Inner Circle come out, and they're all brawling, it becomes this whole big mess, and then Cash tries to go for the bat shot again to Jericho, but we get Tyson stopping him, and then he just, and then Cash tries to go after Tyson, and with one swift punch, Tyson knocks him out, and Guevara gets a distraction to Dax in the ring and allows Chris Jericho to hit the Judas effect for the 1-2-3. And then we get a quick standoff of the Inner Circle and the Pinnacle, and Jericho takes the mic and makes Tyson an official part of the Inner Circle. So, Yeah, I mean, this wasn't my favorite thing on the show, but it was exciting nonetheless. I mean, again, you're getting Dax Harwood and Chris Jericho in a match. It's hard to be exciting. I just felt it under-delivered it a little bit. I get that Tyson is supposed to be the draw there, but I just didn't need all the hocus-pocus stuff. I just kind of wanted to see these guys wrestle. And Chris Jericho can still go, so I would have liked to just see that, but I understand why they did it. I think I just could have used with less. I could have used less of it. And I think that's a byproduct of feeling like this story is like very babyface dominant, which seems weird. If you're going into a blood and guts match, you would assume that MJF's new faction that seems just kind of, I don't know, like an afterthought with the factory thing and the Elite storyline going on. And obviously there's Team Taz as well. There's just a lot of heel factions. And again, factions are great. Stables are great. They just don't feel like as big of a deal as they should. You know, the guys coming out of private jets and all that stuff. And I think that I would have rather seen, as nice as it is to see Chris Jericho get the win. I think they had to because they had Mike Tyson there. But I don't know. I felt like they booked themselves into a corner a little bit with that. I think I would have rather seen the Pinnacle take the win and get a beatdown somehow on the Inner Circle or on somebody, on Mike Tyson, on whoever. I just want to see the Pinnacle be dominant again because they kind of look like a bunch of whips. They look like a bunch of wimps, and yeah. Just not, doesn't get me excited for Blood and Guts. I don't really want to see the Inner Circle beat up the Pinnacle right now because I've already seen it for the past couple weeks. I want to see, you know, I want the anticipation of Blood and Guts because I want to see the Inner Circle, you know, destroy the Pinnacle. I'm not getting that. If that makes any sense. This kind of feels a little bit rushed and a little bit underwhelming, which sucks because this was such a well thought out story, storyline and well plotted out until it kind of came into fruition. You get what I'm trying to say, guys. So, all right. Anyways, that's all I have to say about that. Moving on down, we had Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers and the Young Bucks and Don Callis being interviewed on their way out of the building. Callis takes the mic from Marvez and says that if the wrestling world has learned one thing about them, it's that just when you think you've seen it all, you haven't seen anything because the Young Bucks came back to the fold and it wasn't the end of the story, but it's just the beginning. Kenny cuts a great promo here. He says that they've been listening to the interwebs, the radios and the podcasts, the people on the telly. They ask why they changed, but they never changed. They just got sick of fans wanting them to be just like them. When they go, wherever they go, the gold will follow. And then Matt quickly cuts a quick promo too and says that it's not all just fun and games. It's like the matches of the year coming out of my ear. It's like matches of the year are coming out of my ear, and they have put the tag team division on notice. And then we have Callis saying essentially that you wanted the old Bucks and Kenny, you got them. And then they fake super kick the camera. And even Don Callis does it, that old fart. Nothing much to say about this, but it was good. You know, again, this Elite storyline is great. I kind of mentioned my thoughts earlier on this. I just am looking for a clear direction for Kenny in that world title. But I know they got the whole Impact thing going on. Just seems silly that they're not advertising that more. All right, up next we had Thunder Rosa. We had a video package, and she says she's coming for both the AEW and NWA women's titles, and she's coming to take over the world. And honestly, guys, I hate to be that person, as I, like, was praising the women's division earlier, but you kept Thunder Rosa off my TV for how long? Like, it's not that I have a short memory. I know how awesome that match was. At least Britt Baker, we see her every now and then with a promo from here and there, but kind of underwhelming with Thunder Rosa right now. I need more, and I need it sooner. Now you got to build back up something you shouldn't have ever had to build back up because you just didn't capitalize on the huge amount of momentum both those women came out of that match. So not saying you need to put her in like another freaking unsanctioned match next week. Just saying it would have been nice to see her a little bit more. And so this was underwhelming for me. But then we had Amber Nova versus Chris Stratlander. She's back, guys, from, you know, June, I think is what they said, with a torn ACL. It was good to see her back. She boops the referee and later on boops Amber. Hits a bunch of forearms, a front kick, pie facing her, pulling her orange hanky. Excuse me, Amber hits a bunch of forearms, front kick, pie facing her, and pulls out her orange hanky and tries to wipe off the alien makeup. And that sets Statlander off, and she hits her with a press slam, standing senton, Atomico, thumbs up to the rest of the best friends, and hits the running knee wheelbarrow tombstone pile driver thing. And gets the pinfall. And yeah, this was fun. This was a good little match. Again, I was surprised by how much offense Amber Nova got in, but good for her, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if it was necessarily necessary. I think this was just a, you know, welcome home party for Chris Statlander. God, I can't say anybody's names today. It's like Trish Stratus and Chris Statlander. It's a couple name. Chris Statlander, good coming home party for her, and it was good to see her back. That gimmick has never felt fresher. I don't, you know, that's what a return will do for you, I guess. But all right, next we had Team Tat. A lot of interviews, guys. But I do want to say, before I go down the card more, I mentioned this last week too. Or excuse me, I mentioned this earlier in the show. Said they addressed a lot of the things that I felt like I had problems with last week. Did the exact same thing here in the show. I think there was one time someone was being interviewed and got interrupted. One time. That's a new record for AEW, guys, and it wasn't Sting, so power to him. But Team Taz is being interviewed backstage. Ricky Starks complains about waiting for Christian Cage's decision, and then Taz says it's annoying, but it's best for Ricky Starks to stay backstage because he's got a little bit of a temper. Brian Cage agrees with Taz, tells him he needs to stay backstage too, but promises that he, Hook, and Will Hobbs will take care of business. And then we go to the Christian Cage being interviewed by Tony Schiavone in the ring. Barely gets a couple words out about how he is excited to be interviewed by Tony Schiavone for the first time. And then enter Team Taz. Taz demands to know if he's in or out. And Cage says that he was going to do this later in private. But he says Team Taz is a little bit of a dumpster fire. And that he didn't come there to win. He didn't come there to fix Taz's problems. He came to win championships there, being AEW, obviously. But he's glad he's standing on those steps so he can say it face to face that the answer is no. Taz is clearly not happy about this. Calls him a shitbag and says if he was standing on his wallet, I love that line, if he was standing on his wallet, he'd be 10 feet over his big head. He says that this is the biggest mistake of his career and he never liked him or his stupid buddy, hint hint, Edge, that carried his ass in WWE. And then obviously Will Hobbs does a quick beat down on Christian, and what we're getting from this, guys, is a bunch of matches with Christian probably beating everybody from Team Taz. So probably the match I'm excited for most is either the Ricky Starks match or the Cage match. Cage versus Cage. Put him in a steel cage. yeah, but in all seriousness, it's something for Christian to do. We get to see him wrestle. He gets to be exposed more and more to the AEW fan base. And whatever, I think this is a great path for him to go down right now. And for Team Taz, too. The one thing I could say is I fear that Team Taz is going to look like a bunch of idiots and they're going to become kind of like jobbers for Christian, and I don't really want to see that. And when I say jobbers, I don't mean like they'll be squash matches, but can you really recover? It's kind of like, it's a bad comparison, but John Cena and Nexus. You beat every single person in Nexus, this one guy. If Christian beats every single guy in Team Taz, what does that say about Team Taz? So just food for thought. I don't know, but I'm excited for the matchups nonetheless. And then we get a video package hyping Hikaru Shida's defense of the AEW Women's Championship against Ty Conti next week. Looking forward to that, and we will preview that and everything else at the end of the show here. And then we have the main event. Darby Allin. Well, I don't know why this was the main event, but Darby Allin versus Matt Hardy for the AEW TNT Championship. It is a Falls Count Anywhere match. Going to try to recap this as short as I can because I couldn't have been less interested. Hardy hits a bunch of offense with the steel chair. Darby blocks a twist of fate and gets a chair shot of his own. Hardy's group comes out and throws a trash can at Darby Allin. They beat him down. Butcher and Blade move to the steps position, but then the Dark Order comes and Sting as well to even the odds. Darby beats Hardy up against the barricade, and then we go to break. When we come back from picture in picture, Hardy slams Darby Allin into the steps and he bounces over the barricade. Then we get Lance Archer comes out. He stops for some reason. All Ego, Ethan Page, and Scorpio Sky were out there. I don't know why. I assume I missed something. Whatever. And basically confronts Sting and hits Isaiah Cassidy with the blackout and just like doesn't take his eyes off Sting. And then Darby Allin goes after Matt Hardy with the bat, but Matt Hardy hits a low blow. He hits Darby with the Twist of Fate on the chair, and he gets a near fall because Darby Allin is indestructible. He hits a very anticlimactic leg drop through the table about halfway up a ladder backstage. Did anybody else feel like that? It was super anticlimactic. And I know he's old. I'm not complaining. Like, I get it. He's old. Then don't have him do any of this stuff. I don't need to see a half-assed version of Matt Hardy. I'm sorry. But whatever. They go back to the stage. Darby Allin gets the bat and hits Hardy in the head with it. He destroys the monitors at commentary just because he's fired up, guys. And then chokes Matt Hardy with the bat. Climbs the scaffolding, coffin drop through the announce table, and that's the 1-2-3, and that is the end of AEW Dynamite for this week, guys. I thought this was senseless violence for senseless violence sake, and it wasn't even good violence. Like, it wasn't Arcade Anarchy violence that was, like, really fun to watch. I was so bored during this match, and I feel really bad saying that, because I have all kinds of respect for all of these guys who put their and gals who put their body on the line, especially in these types of matches that are hard hitting and you're using steel chairs and you could already see the welts on Darby Allin's back. And I mean, the stuff Matt Hardy has done throughout his career is unbelievable. And again, I have all the respect in the world for that. Jeff Hardy as well, like all these guys who do these unbelievable daredevil-y things, Darby Allin too. My issue is that AEW has been leaning on the violence with the chair shots and the bats and the whatever a lot lately. A lot. To an unnecessary amount. Because they have really good just pro wrestlers in there that can put on really good exciting wrestling matches that could be 10. I thought the John Silver Darby Allin match was 10 times more exciting than this match. I thought the one, I can't even remember his name, James Drake or something, right? The one like last week was, or 2 weeks ago, I forget what it was more exciting than this too. And I can't even remember the guy's name or when it was. JD Drake. There it is. Again, that's not a fault on JD Drake. That's a fault on my memory and past recreational activities. So yeah, I was just not all about this, guys. And these TNT title defenses are just like not hitting for me in the way that Cody's did. Really, Hardy looks like an old man when he moves and when he wrestles. It's kind of like Jeff Hardy too. You see Jeff Hardy in WWE like limps to the ring. It's just uncomfortable to watch. He looks like he's got like wooden legs now. And I feel like Matt Hardy's the same. He just can't go like he used to, and that's okay. And in any other wrestling promotion, he'd be fine. But this is All Elite Wrestling, guys, and I hate to break it to you, Matt Hardy wrestling anymore is not All Elite. It's just hard to watch. At least for me. Again, that's my opinion, and I mean, this is my show, so it's my opinion, but yeah, I wasn't about this. I wasn't about this match. I think the spots were, I mean, the coffin drop was probably the one cool spot, really. But like I said, that leg drop just looked painful. Don't do it. Like, don't put your body on the line for something that's not going to look cool like that. It's just, it's not worth it. So I don't know, maybe I'm the only one who felt that way about this. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. I know you can always email me at mimi.real@wwepodcast.gmail.com. Maybe one day I'll get a Twitter, guys. Maybe if we sign a petition for Mimi to get a Twitter, I'll do that one day. But yeah, I was not a fan of this. But to me, when I go through the show, really the only low point on the entire show for me, you know, the first two matches were probably the biggest, the most exciting part for me, with the annoying and insufferable Young Bucks, and the Red Velvet and Jade Cargill match was just fun to watch. The rest of the stuff was good, you know. But yeah, this main event to me didn't deserve to be the main event. Didn't need to be on Dynamite. Didn't need to be a match. Yeah, they got to stop with this Matt Hardy stuff, man. There's so much other talent. I'd rather watch Darby Allin wrestle. So many other guys. And Matt Hardy is just not for me. Do the ranking systems matter at all for the TNT title? Is that a thing? Or how does that work? I don't know. And again, maybe even if the story was a little bit better to build up to some of this senseless violence, so it wouldn't be so senseless. But again, like I said, at the end of the day, guys, the violence wasn't even really exciting anyways. And again, maybe I'm getting desensitized because AEW's given us a lot of violence lately. in my opinion, I think they need to tone it back in the next couple of weeks, especially when we're coming up on Blood and Guts. I'm sure they're going to do some crazy crap at Blood and Guts, but I don't know. If I were them, I'd tone it back a little bit so that crazy crap looks even crazier. But yeah, that's what I had to say about this week's AEW. Next week, before I actually preview the matches, like I said, guys, we have got Ashley Mann on the show next week to review Dynamite with me. A little co-host, a little bit, probably going to be a little bit of a longer show. Exciting stuff. I'm really excited to hear what she has to say about AEW. She actually went to their first ever show, first ever live show. So, you know, she is definitely a fan and probably has more knowledge than I do. So I'm super excited to have her on this show. Make sure you tune in, guys. It's going to be great. I just know it. And yeah, so next week's matches, we have JR. What am I reading? No, next week's matches. All right. Next week's matches, we have the Women's World title is on the line. Akara Shida versus Ty Conti. That should be exciting. I think we all know probably that Shida is taking that. I don't think it's Ty Conti's time yet, but it has been fun to watch her build up. I don't know about you guys, though. Like, the promo package was nice. I think I would have rather seen her in an interview or something. You know, or just a little bit more, because I kind of, I felt like this lost a little bit of legs this week, because maybe it just didn't have a lot to stand on before. But whatever, I think this should be a good match, and I think Shida is going to, you know, be a great general for Ty Conti, and I hopefully they don't put this in the third hour, because it's a freaking championship match. You know, if they really have a lot of faith in it, maybe it'll main event, or maybe it'll open the show, but I doubt that. But I just think they should treat this as a championship match. And where were the other two championship matches on the show this week? Food for thought. All right, then we've got Hobbs versus Christian Cage next week as well. Like I said, I think I'm calling that Christian's probably going to take that. And again, in a very hard-fought victory, similar to what he had with Frankie Kazarian. I don't think the match is going to be, the dynamic is going to be the same. It's going to be more of a Christian struggling against a big guy, obviously, because look at Will Hobbs. But I don't think it's in question that Christian wins this match. The one thing I have to say is, do you guys think Christian will have any allies come out and try to help him when Team Taz inevitably tries to get involved? Or do you think Team Taz's inner turmoil is going to be, you know, lead to its demise? And then these matches, or them losing these matches, are going to lead to the end of Team Taz? All right, and then next we have Adam Page versus Ricky Starks, and that should be a fun match for sure. It's going to be great to see Ricky in the ring. I don't think I've seen him in the ring. I mean, again, I don't necessarily always watch Dark and Elevation, guys, so I don't know. I don't remember the last time I've seen him on Dynamite. The last time I can remember seeing him in anything was the cinematic match with Sting and Darby Allin. So that'll be a fun match to watch. And then last but not least, too, we've got Trent versus Penta. And that is going to be probably a third hour match, but should definitely be fun and interesting. I think I prefer Trent in a tag team role, but it's definitely going to be fun to watch Penta in a ring per usual. Excited to see what they do. That seems like something that under promises, but it's absolutely going to over deliver. And I'm probably calling, obviously Adam Page in the match beforehand. And I think, I don't know, guys. I think Trent takes the win against Penta, and I think it's going to start this best friends versus Death Triangle feud up again. So we'll have to see. I'm excited to watch it next week and talk to you guys about it as well. And again, like I said, last time I will plug it, Ashley Mann will be on the show with us next week. So get hype, get excited. Mojo Rawley, get hype. We don't get hype, we stay hype here on the AEW Dynamite Review Show. Maybe that'll be the new intro. God, could you imagine? Before we sign off, guys, I do want to quickly mention that, like I said, today is April 15th, 2021. On the 22nd, I will be getting some surgery done, some vision surgery, eye surgery, and that's a Thursday. So that's the day after next week's review show. I didn't want to fill this stuff in, obviously, with Ashley Mann and my conversation, so I wanted to mention it this week. Therefore, I do not know what the recovery is going to look like. I don't know if I will have to not do a show for a week or so. We're kind of playing it by ear or playing it by eye. Wink, wink, hint, hint. Ooh, wink, wink, get it? Playing it by eye? All right. Anyways, yes, we're probably playing it by ear for now, but I do want to mention that. I'm not sure, including the highs and lows, and I'll probably mention it on that show as well. I'm not sure I might be a week or so without me producing any shows here on the WWE podcast, just because if I can't see, can't watch wrestling, and I can't review it either. Though I could probably come on here on the highs and lows and tell you it was some crap from WWE Raw and some good stuff from like NXT, SmackDown, or AEW was the high, and that's pretty easy. But so yeah, we'll see. I'm not sure exactly how everything's gonna go, but I do want to mention that and make sure you guys know. I'm not, you know, not going anywhere. Just obviously we'll be out of commission for a little while. So we'll see though. Who knows? Maybe I will feel up to it. And yeah, we'll just have to play it by ear. So once again, guys, I want to thank you all for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope you all have a wonderful week. I will talk to you guys on the Highs and Lows show later on this Saturday night / Sunday morning. Unless you don't listen to that show, then you can go to hell. No, I'm kidding. I will see you next week on this AEW Dynamite review show. And I hope you have, like I said, a great week. And I'll talk to you guys next time.